Employee experience is a priority because it drives retention, engagement, and, ultimately, business growth. Yet turnover keeps rising because traditional approaches to improving experience are too narrow. SAP SuccessFactors helps you expand your strategy and redefine employee experiences from every angle. You can capture in-the-moment insights from employees across multiple interactions, then link them with operational data to see what is happening in your workforce and understand why. You can break down system barriers using intelligent technology to integrate experiences within HR and across the business. And you can proactively tackle the toughest challenges like diversity, inclusion, well-being, and more. With SAP SuccessFactors, you can deliver comprehensive, unexpectedly exceptional experiences that keep employees engaged and keep your business growing. Hi, everyone. It's Rebecca. You're listening to Superwoman. Today, I am thrilled to bring to you Dee Poku. She is a founder of many things. One of the things she has founded is called A Dinner for Ladies, where she brings incredible women together in a room to have vulnerable, passionate, interesting conversations. She's also the founder of The Other Festival. And this was a great, honest episode. So take a listen. I am here with the incredibly inspirational and talented Dee Poku. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for calling me that.
So I would love for us to start with, what is the WE Network and how did you come up with the idea?
So WE is a community and it's designed to give women the network and the support systems they need to get ahead and to be successful. And it was inspired by my own experiences navigating the workplace. So I spent most of my career working for big corporations. And it's hard as a woman, and it's hard as a woman of color to overcome, you know, the various obstacles. And I feel like there are things in sort of in the business world that are really sort of designed to trip women up. And if you don't understand those invisible rules, it can be very difficult for you. And so whenever I came up against those roadblocks, I had to just figure them out for myself. And I would either fail and learn from it or, you know, somehow stumble upon the right answer. But I didn't have anyone to really turn to. I didn't have people that I felt comfortable sharing my weaknesses with or sharing my confusion with. So I certainly didn't have mentors, or nor did I even understand that concept or that even could exist for me. And so, you know, I did well doing what I did in the movie business, but there's so much more that I could have done. And WE was created to sort of help women like me, so women who were in the similar situation, to figure things out and to learn from the experiences of others.
And what does WE stand for?
WE stands for Women, Inspiration, and Enterprise, which is a very long, unwieldy name. But it does have a purpose. And I do think that any organization or industry organization that's designed to sort of support women or just executives should have a dual function. So, you know, we have hard days. We have, you know, just sort of tough moments. And so we need that inspiration and motivation daily. And that can come through just knowing someone's overcome the same hurdles or just sort of being around or hearing from people who have been there. And so that's the inspiration portion, is just sort of, what do you need to get you over the daily humps? And then the enterprise is really the toolkit. So we don't just want women to come to talks and just hear inspiring people and go home and have a 5-minute high. We want them to leave with a notebook filled with ideas and, you know, sort of specific, you know, the sort of nuts and bolts that they need. So we want them to understand how to negotiate. We want them to understand how to present themselves, what their personal story and narrative is. We want them to understand, you know, all facets of the business world, from digital, you know, to marketing, to fundraising. So we just want to sort of give them that full breadth of information.
So you started that, and then you also started something called The Other Festival. What is The Other Festival, and how did you decide to launch not just one, but two companies?
So it was, The Other Festival was inspired by the changing demographic of the women who started to come to the events. So WE was created to support women who had my specific background and experience. So women who were sort of in that middle point, midpoint of their careers, where you're just starting to come up against the glass ceiling, or, you know, and so it was really about sort of female executives navigating corporate culture. That was me. And then what I noticed was that the demo started skewing younger and younger, and there were all these like badass young 20-year-olds, you know, who wanted success yesterday and were filled with ideas, who were also showing up. And they were very entrepreneurial, very ideas-driven, very impatient, looking for experiences. And it just started to feel like what I was providing with WE wasn't really serving that specific audience particularly well. And I also was just inspired by this sort of burgeoning entrepreneurial spirit that I was seeing in young women. So most of the entrepreneurs I knew were women who had had jobs and then transferred into entrepreneurship, whereas these were women who straight out of college were like, okay, I have this idea, I'm going to go raise money and like make it happen. And so the other festival was really for them. And so it encompasses more. It has all of the great components of WE, all this, the learning and the networking, but it's also very experiential. And so there's music and art and books, and it's a way of sort of forming community around creativity and, yeah, and just sort of creating that more sort of innovative space. And so I wanted to call it something else just to give it its own identity. And that was an impulse, but actually ended up feeling like the right decision, though now I have to figure out how to really sort of merge the two entities. But that's for another conversation.
Being that there are lots of female conferences popping up, and there's old ones, there's new ones all the time, how would you distinguish the other festival from the rest? Like, what would make someone who's listening go, oh, this is for me?
You know, I get asked this question a lot, and there is a lot out there. You know, one thing I would say was that I've been doing this a while. So before this was a thing, you know, I started this organization and saw this need. And so I think that I've just had a very long time to really learn and understand from women about what their needs are. Most people who come to our events describe the authenticity of it, that there's just this real sense of women pulling together in a very sort of authentic way. And there's a certain kind of woman who's attracted to my events, and she tends to be sort of a cosmopolitan city girl who's, you know, ideas driven, and whether she works for a company or whether she's starting her own thing, she still has that entrepreneurial spirit in her. So she works for a company, she's still sort of innovating and entrepreneurial within her company. And so I just think it's that sort of, you know, there's a certain type of woman, and you meet a WE woman and you sort of know who she is. And so people form really deep connections when they come, because they just find that there are like-minded people there for them. But, you know, and above that, I would just say that the content is always really, really practical. I don't want to waste anyone's time ever. And so I just, you know, I defy anyone to come and say that they came to an event of mine and left empty-handed.
I like that challenge. So one of the things, and I think for people who maybe aren't in this world, to be able to get people like Arianna Huffington or Christy Turlington or Donna Karan to speak at your festival, that's no small feat. What was a secret ingredient for gaining this type of support and involvement with women that are so high profile?
I think it's really important to know why you're asking whoever you're asking, and to have a bespoke approach to them. And so I, you know, I'll never just send like standard letters to everybody. I just try and tailor it to the person. And, you know, I'm very specific about who I ask to speak. So it's never just sort of, these are the names, so I'm just going to ask. I'm always scribbling notes, because I'll read something or see something or hear something, and I think, you know, this woman, like, I love what she has to say, or I love how she's approaching her work. And so I always have sort of copious notes in the back of my iPhone with just names of people.
So many.
So many. So many. So that's, you know, that's important. So I always know exactly why I'm asking them. And I think that's important. But also, you know, I've built a network and I've built relationships. I started in the fashion business. I then moved into the movie industry and now I'm doing this. And over the years, I've, you know, built some really sort of strong relationships with people who have connections. And so I generally always know someone who knows someone who knows that person. And so it's just always, you know, easier to go through a connection than, you know, to sort of fire off standard letters through, you know, an info email.
I always say the 6 degrees of separation is totally real. It's what got me to where I got to. I had 6 degrees of different women just helping me, passing the baton, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
It's completely that. So I'm surrounded by women who have connections and women who want to help. And I like to say that the key to your success is through the power of your network. And I truly believe that, that everything I have, everything I've achieved has been through the incredible network of women who are around me. And so if you haven't cultivated those relationships, and I mean cultivate in the sort of most authentic, loving sense of that word, if you don't have that around you, then I think it's just very hard to succeed.
Yeah. So once you had confirmed early on, you know, some of these larger names, how did you gain momentum to get the attention so that people would attend the festival? How do you like capture then an audience, I guess, is what I'm asking.
So, I mean, now it has this terminology around it, but, you know, and they call it sort of micro influencers, but it didn't, you know, there was no such thing then. Or even influence, you know, influencers was used in a very different way.
We're dating ourselves, Dee.
So old. So, you know, I think, again, it's about, you know, who are the pockets of people who have influence within their circles? And do they believe in what you're doing enough to share that with their circles? And then those circles share with other circles. And I really believe in that grassroots approach. And the reason I operate that way is that in my movie career, that's how we promoted movies. So I worked for studios, but I always worked on the indie side of things. So I was always working on this sort of smaller budget, more auteur-driven content. And so we didn't have the big budgets that the big studio would have. So we couldn't sort of spend masses on like big ads. And so it was so much more about critical support and word of mouth and all of that sort of grassroots stuff. And so I have a sort of deep and intrinsic understanding about the human psyche and what makes people want to share things with other people and how you position things to different audiences. And so I think it's about understanding your audience, having a really good understanding of who they are and creating the materials and the language around that, and then tapping into all of your micro influencers, as well as, you know, the press and all the other stuff. But I just think that when you start to see that all the people who you admire or who you think are interesting, are all doing the same thing, you know, then you just follow. It's just human nature.
Right. We're all cows.
We are.
So what do you think, not that you can boil this down, but I'm curious to know what you see. What do women, either in business or as entrepreneurs or working in the corporate world, what are some of the biggest challenges you see that we are encountering, and the advice to overcome that?
Well, I think we're stuck. I think we're stuck. I mean, obviously, there are people who break through, but I would say overall, as a gender, I think we're sort of stuck in this holding pattern. And I've just seen there are just so many organizations and networks and advocacy groups and everyone doing this work to move women forward. And yet, when you look at the stats, like we're just sort of hovering, like we just can't land the plane. And I think we're stuck because of the status quo at the top, and it's just unchanging. And until there is like a radical shift in the sort of the gender of the people in positions of power, we're just never going to have that trickle down effect. So there needs to be like a radical shift, because otherwise all they do, which is sort of half human nature, is just kind of support other people who look like them. And it's just natural for them to want to do that. Is, you know, you're a dude, you see like a like-minded dude, and you just want to help the dude, you know, like you just don't, Bob, and you just don't necessarily, you know, relate to Rebecca and Dee, and you try. But, and so, you know, I just feel that, you know, more radical solutions are called for. And I strongly believe in quotas, and I know that it's very unpopular with some people. But, you know, if you look at countries like France and Canada, where they have quotas, and Norway, and where they have quotas around women on boards, for example, there's been a radical improvement in the percentage of women on corporate boards in those countries because of quotas. And I think that we've spent years waiting for the systems to do right, you know, by women and by people of color, and it's just not happening. Like, we're just stuck. And so I think we have to force the change. And once we force that change, we have to sort of allow for, you know, some generational shifts. Because often, I remember Tarana Burke said this really well, where she spoke at Cannes Lions, and someone was asking her about the fact that there are women who are in positions of power who still don't then sort of change the demographic makeup of the workforce. And she said, it's two things. Like, women can also be affected by patriarchy. So we can also, you know, have had the same conditioning that makes us sort of act in the same way. And so even though, you know, we've reached a position of CEO, we still kind of allow the same systems to continue. And so we need sort of time to get comfortable and to evolve our thinking to change those systems. But also you need the right women. So it's not just about any woman. It's like women who want to go in and sort of radically shake things up. And so I think that we need sort of, you know, both those things to happen, is, you know, more women at the top making those decisions. And when you look at, again, like countries in the Nordic regions, and you see in government, you know, the bills that are discussed, and, like, you know, the issues that are at the forefront, you know, they're things like, you know, maternity leave and just, you know, other issues that affect women in the workplace. And so, you know, we do that naturally.
Someone told me that Henry Ford was the creator of the modern, you know, 9-to-5, a man. And even that, you know, even if we shifted how we look at a workday, right. I know as a woman, I have a drastically different idea for a modern workday.
Yep.
10-to-4 would be great. You can take your kids to school. You can go to the gym, maybe get some self-care in there and be home to make dinner if you like that sort of thing. I mean, it's just fascinating that it's everything that we know of is based on a man for a car factory.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I'm struggling right now. I'm really struggling. Like,
me too, sister.
September is a tough month.
Yeah.
And I don't think people really appreciate that enough. And the struggle, you know, when I drop my kid off at 8:20, and you have tons more children than I do, so I bow down to you. But, you know, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted just, you know, getting him to school, and then that sort of, you know, 2:40 end time. Like, what is that? Like, who's that designed to
punishment.
Help? It's punishment. And yet at the same time, women, you know, if they leave the office to go, you know, because they want to see their kids or because they want to spend time with their kids, they're penalized for it. And so, you know, structurally, the whole system, you know, is a disaster. And I just don't think that, you know, even well-meaning men will think in the same way as we would about how we would structure our lives, you know, if we were in those positions.
Right.
You know, and as you say, the workplace, you know, as it stands, was created by men. And so, you know, we need some radical shifts in the way that we approach that.
Totally. So you went from being in fashion to working within the film industry, and then you decided to shift gears and become an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any moments at that point of like, I'm leaving maybe something that's safe and starting out on my own? And what was that feeling like? And how did you sort of say, fuck it, I'm going forward, I'm going to do this?
It was the most terrifying time of my life. You know, I like to describe it as almost having been institutionalized. You know, I was so used to the perks of working for fancy companies. And you don't even realize just how much that has sort of affected your psyche until you leave all of that behind.
No one's paying for your Ubers anymore.
No, but, you know, I mean, I used to be able to, and, you know, obviously this is privilege, but, you know, I used to be able to kind of just, if I was going on a trip, I would just walk out the door and the car would be there and everything had been planned. And there were IT people who fixed your computer and people and travel companies. And, you know, they were just sort of just basic structural things that allowed you to sort of move through your workday in a very comfortable manner. And then suddenly you're on your own and sitting in the Apple Genius Bar. And it's, you know, it's just, it's a radical shift. The big change for me actually was I hadn't realized just how much my identity had been bound up in my job. So I'd become so accustomed to saying, I'm Dee from Paramount, I'm Dee from Universal, like I'm Dee from these fancy companies. And people would sort of respond, you know, in the right way, and they would return my calls or just be nice to me. And I just assumed they were being nice to me because I was great. And so, you know, that was different, you know, particularly because I was in LA at the time, and LA is definitely its own beast. And people are sort of very transparent about their ambition. And so they, you know, they want to know fairly quickly if you're going to be helpful or not. And so that they can move on. And so I would just kind of anticipate that and almost sort of take myself out of the equation. It was like a very, you know, strange thing. And so what I realized I was doing, which was pointed out to me by a friend, was that I wasn't sort of owning my power. And when people inquired about what I did, I would answer in this sort of, you know, half-hearted, shoulders hunch, sort of, I do this thing and then my voice would trail off. And because I just didn't feel important enough yet, because my business wasn't successful and people hadn't heard of it. And so that took some time to get around. And then suddenly I found it. And there was just such a change in the way that people responded to me, you know, when my shoulders were back and when I asserted myself and when I spoke with confidence and when I made it sound great. And, you know, people are attracted to things that sound exciting and things, you know. And so, you know, it was a sort of subtle shift in my manner that really sort of changed the way I approached my business and made a huge impact.
I always look for a firm handshake. If I get a wimpy one, I'm like, ooh, not for me.
Yeah.
So I would love to talk about career obstacles. Being an entrepreneur, I could tell you mine all day long. everyone has them. Not only are you starting out as an entrepreneur, you know, earlier, you're a woman, more specifically, you're a woman of color. What are some of the challenges that you've had to navigate now that you full force go into being an entrepreneur?
Money, 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 money. And did I mention money?
Yeah. Lots of money.
Lots of money. You know, it's a tough one. And I encourage anyone who has daughters to teach them how to talk about money comfortably, to ask for money, to, you know, just to be comfortable around that subject, to understand it, to understand their finances. I think it's, you know, the most important skill that we can give young women. There are lots of stats around the percentages of women who don't negotiate salaries, you know, who don't, you know, who go into pitch meetings and don't actually ask for the money. And so I definitely, you know, have fallen into that bracket. I found it hard to ask for money when I worked for companies. I find it difficult to sort of pitch and ask for money. I can talk about my vision and my mission all day long. But the asking for the money, I've definitely always found hard. And I've had to sort of train myself and exercise that muscle.
It's a muscle.
Yeah, it really is. To sort of improve that skill.
Yep. Switching gears a little bit, what were some of the biggest lessons you've learned in creating this platform that supports and encourages women in business?
I think the biggest lesson is... it sort of goes back to the, you know, the network thing, but just the importance of being an ally and having allies around you, and how important those allies were to me, and how it's sort of impossible to succeed without them, and how important it is to sort of to be that to other people. And, you know, being an ally means making yourself uncomfortable. It's picking up the phone to call that person that you just, like, you know, you really sort of don't want to bother them, like, and especially, like, not on behalf of somebody else, you know, because it's like it's your contact. And or hearing something in a conversation that's just not right, you know, that you know, maybe racist or sexist, or, you know, where you should just use your voice and correct that situation, like those sorts of things. I think are really important. And
how have you learned to do that, to like get comfortable with that discomfort?
I'm still learning, you know, and it depends on the situation. And sometimes, you know, it's about saying the thing in front of everyone in the group. Sometimes it's about a private word. Sometimes it's just about giving yourself that sort of talking to, like, why don't you want to do that? Like, what is it that's sort of stopping you? Why are you sort of annoyed by that email or that person that keeps asking? Whatever it is, like, it's about sort of, you know, that self-awareness and then sort of tackling that in yourself and getting to know yourself better and being braver. I find it easier, actually, to do this in sort of public forums. It's so much easier, like in social or, you know, speaking on a panel in public forums to sort of say the things. It's a little bit harder in a small group. I was with a friend recently who, I don't want her to be identified.
Your friend, Mary.
My friend, Mary. You know, who said something about the way she was raising her daughter that was sort of related to race. And I thought that's wrong. And we were in a group and I just felt it was inappropriate to call her out in that group. I didn't want to sort of embarrass her. And I'm still figuring out like how to say what I need to say to her without her being offended. But I also know that I need to say it to her.
Totally.
And so I'm working on that. So I think it's about like it's situation by situation, but also just making yourself brave. What I do see is that most people can be brave in a public forum and are less brave privately with friends. And
you just made me realize that, because I'll say just about anything in a public forum, but I have a friend who comes to my house and expects to be waited on hand and foot by myself and my husband and clean up after her. She doesn't even know that I feel this way, because I can't bring myself to be like, I'm not your maid. This is not an inn. You're not welcome here until you clean up your shit.
Right.
So it's funny you say that, because there it is. So when you feel asked to help out another, or you feel like you know you need to say something, do you ever feel this burden, knowing you want to help, but it still feels like a burden to do it? And how do you sort of get through that? Or not?
It's a burden, mostly because it's a number of things, right? And so, you know, one is that I'm busy, and so I'm just about getting through my own days and, you know, raising my kid and, you know, forget the marriage, right?
Who's that?
There is a husband somewhere in the background.
A very understanding husband.
Yes, yes. So, you know, so there's all of that. So it's like, you know, I'm trying to sort of deal with my own stuff. And then there's this sort of, you know, business relationships that you've built up over a period of time and sort of getting past, you know, not wanting to sort of rock relationships. And for me, it depends on who's doing the asking and the nature of the relationship. And, you know, and I just try and deal with everything on a case by case basis. You know, I try to help everyone in some way. If I can't do the thing, maybe there's a way I can steer them in another direction. So I can't do this thing, but I can help you in this other way. You know, because of what I do, I get countless emails and approaches from young women who want to meet, you know, who want advice. And, you know, again, that's a lot. And so I've started trying to do this thing where, like, on Fridays is when, you know, I'll just kind of try and follow up with those women. And I have a friend who does like office hours where she'll just meet a bunch, which I think is a really great idea. So, you know, I think that you have to sort of think about who you are and what you're capable of. Like, don't sort of make sure that, you know, you're strong and think about your own self-care first, because you're no good to anyone if, like, you know, you're not protected and safe. And then you have to sort of, you know, deal with each thing on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, it's important that we give, and it's about the degree to which you can do what you do. But, yeah.
Totally. So one thing that frustrates me is the word empowerment, which implies that we don't have our own power, it's given to you. Mm-hmm. Yet this word is thrown around and used by every organization that wants to help us. Even sometimes I find myself saying it because of a lack of another word. Mm-hmm. If you have the word, that would be better than that. let me know. But what do you think we can do to change that idea if you don't have the word?
Yeah. I know it's a word, you know, way back when that I used to use and now I've banned it. I won't use it anymore because I also think that it's a cop-out and it allows companies to put sort of a surface balm on the situation. Like, we're empowering our women with this, you know, great Women's Day. Like, that bullshit, you know, give me the pay rise, like, give me the promotion, you know, like, give me the big contract, like, pay me. Like, those are the things that, you know, that I want to see. And I want to see women put into positions of power. And so, yeah, I don't use the word empowerment ever. And so I just use other variations around sort of like more hardline things like gender equality and women's rights and, you know, the vast array of options that you have. Yeah. But right. Yeah, I think empower has become a cop out for so many companies. And, you know, it's actually sort of quite irritating to me because there's so many now sort of empowering ads. And then when you look behind the companies who are creating this content or, you know, creating those ads, then, you know, you see that they're not sort of walking the talk, you know, like, so don't create these like super cool viral ads and then have no women on your board, have no women in senior management, you know, have no good sort of paid leave policies.
Right.
You know, like, I think that we should always look behind the companies doing this stuff.
Totally. So one thing I like to ask everybody, just because obviously there's what's Googleable about you, is what's something that we would be surprised to know about you?
Okay. So I went to a convent.
Wow. Like, you went to college at a convent or you just went to a convent?
I went to a convent school, like high school.
Okay.
I don't know what you call it here, but when I was junior school, I don't know. I don't really understand the school thing, but when I was going to school,
okay,
it was a convent run by nuns.
Okay.
And that wasn't very nice because they were mean nuns.
Mean nuns are the worst.
Mean nuns. But there was a period during that time when I thought I wanted to be a nun. And so that's interesting.
That's very interesting. What was that aha moment where you said, nope, not for me?
You know, I found the Catholic Church to just be very unforgiving, and it just felt, it was sort of filled with rules and regulations that at the time I wouldn't have called it sort of a gendered thing, but now I realize that's what it was.
Right.
So even in, you know, at the age of 7, something didn't feel right to me. And so, you know, so this, I was very, very young. And so, you know, that went away. But there was a time when I just thought that being a nun would be sort of a good way
to help
and to give back.
Well, now you're helping in incredible ways.
Yeah.
So I feel like you've given great nuggets of advice throughout this interview, but is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with as kind of what I hope they can take with on their day and change about their lives?
So, I mean, I guess, you know, what I've learned is how to deal with rejection and the bad times. And I just think that, especially as an entrepreneur, or even just at any point, like, your life just, like, it ebbs and flows and there are peaks and valleys. And without sounding sort of trite, with every valley, you know, there is a peak coming and you have to, what I do is that I try and recover fast. I think it's really important to, like, have your cry and then just, like, go into solution mode. And, you know, and so I just think that it's important to just roll with the bad times, knowing that, you know, good times are around the corner.
I love that.
You know, it's just served me well and has just sort of kept me positive and motivated. And as an entrepreneur, you need that. You need that sort of self-motivation. And so just knowing that, you know, there's something around the corner really helps me.
Totally. I feel like with us overindulged millennials, rejection can be hard sometimes. But guess what? It happens every day.
It happens every day. And, you know, and just sort of don't take it personally. it's not you. I mean, you know, I like there are people who email me who I, you know, forget to email back or, you know, are in my drafts box. My drafts box is horrendous. Everyone goes into drafts so I can remember to email them back and then, you know. And so, you know, that you just don't know why. And so just, you know, learning how not to personalize and just think about where you're, you know, where you're trying to get to and your own path rather than sort of self-flagellating is really important.
So with your quick recoveries after you've been rejected, what does that healing process look like for you?
So for me, a problem shared is a problem halved. So I'm not one to wallow by myself. And I just find that when you're sort of in the thick of an issue, it's just very hard to sort of see out of the, you know, the fog. And sharing that with somebody who has an objective view of it can immediately sort of lift you out of where you are. And I have a, you know, I encourage everyone actually. So I have a sort of a best friend who is my kind of go-to on these things. Like, I think that everyone should have that person who you can be completely vulnerable with, like with just with no artifice, like just lay it all out there, who really knows you and who loves and respects you and you know, and sees your potential and is there for you regardless, so that you can sort of, you know, just kind of go there with that person. And so I have that person. And so I can just go and say, like, this really shitty thing happened. And she's like, well, but you know that you always do this thing. And like, she just kind of can immediately see it. And I can see it for her too. And so for me, it's about sharing.
Yeah.
And then immediately going into solution mode. So what went wrong? What do I need to do next? Yeah. And I just think that as soon as you start doing that, you'll just slowly lift yourself out of it. And everyone, you know, it takes us all different amounts of time. And, you know, it's just, it's the nature of my personality to do that. I know that, you know, for other people, you know, it can be a harder process, but I just always encourage people not to go through anything by themselves if they can.
Agreed. I always like to air this with someone who I'm close to, but that's in a certain, not even a similar business, but a similar level, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's business issues,
yes.
Right? Because it's one thing to share it with your friend who is a stay-at-home mom and she has no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
But
yeah.
I'll usually find someone who's like CEO or just whatever in my network. And
yeah.
I'm like, let me vomit on you. What do I do?
Yeah. I mean, it has to be someone whose opinion you trust and value and respect from a professional standpoint. So,
right.
It, you know, so they need to be on your level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing against no one that's not on your level.
No.
Just want to put, that's my little warning.
But it's just that I think that, you know, for most of us, you know, we're trying to sort of walk through life seeming to have it together. And so it can be harder to go there with someone who's not on your level.
Totally.
And so I just think that when it's someone who sort of gets it, you know, who's at the same place, it's just easier to sort of be more honest than with someone, you know, who's up and coming, who you're sort of trying to be a mentor and sort of be together with. It's just different.
Yeah, you don't want to vomit all over someone that's still excited about starting their
business.
Yeah,
exactly. This is what's coming your way. So suck it up.
Deepoku, thank you so much.
I love this. Thank you.
Yeah. That was Deepoku. If you want to know more about her, you can follow her at Deepoku. Today, our review is from NYI Phone Gal. All I knew about Rebecca before listening was that she had founded a clothing company. That's about it. I've since become a total fan because her guests have all been great and the topics interesting. Her down-to-earth, honest approach to asking questions and sharing her own experience come across as super relatable, even though she's a millionaire founder. I wish I was a millionaire founder. That would be awesome. I'm now a real fan. Great podcast for anyone interested in hearing the inside story about starting and running a business. You are so welcome, and thanks for tuning in.